Seems like Hirsch made that dress up.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've been discussing the difference between a poel and a koblen, and we saw the stira between the two chuvos of the Chumash HaDeshen. Does this ring familiar?
Yep.
Okay. We saw a few different ways of distinguishing between them. The question was, if you're basically a koblen under time constraint, does that turn you into a poel? And the first Chumash HaDeshen seemed to say yes. That was the traveling to make the shidduch case, because you had to do it within 3 weeks, you were a poel. The second case seemed to say no. That was the case where you were hired to make 10 barrels of wine during the wine season. He seemed to say, oh, you're a koblen, because you're primarily hired to make wine, even though you're bound by the season. So we were trying to figure out exactly what is the basis to distinguishing the cases. Maybe it's like a judgment call about how short the time frame is. Maybe it's about how the compensation is structured, or being paid per hour, or being paid for the job. Gabe had the distinction between is the time frame front and center? Is it like imposed upon you, or is it just a background assumption given how people usually do this, right? So make 10 barrels of wine. Oh, yeah, the background assumption is that it's usually within the wine season, the vintage season. And so that's not prominent in their agreement. That makes you a koblen. But if it's stipulated explicitly and it's like not just the industry standards, I say, oh, get this done within 3 weeks, then maybe that bumps you up to a poel. Another way you might distinguish, at Pesach Choshen, I think, point here on the bottom of 29, he quotes the Mariel Diskin, who addresses this question. And he just says, oh, v'chosav du lai talo l'firu osene bezdin. Like, maybe it's really like a case-by-case determination, where I guess you use these factors, right, about what kinds of freedom does the poel have, and is there some time limit? Is he being paid per hour? So those would all factor into this determination, but really there's no objective way of distinguishing a poel from a koblen. And I guess you just have to look at the substantive features of the employment and make a judgment call whether he has sufficient freedoms to be a koblen or whether he's sufficiently under the authority of his employer, under the control of his employer, to be a poel. I think it's nice about this Mariel Diskin is getting at. The Pesach Choshen himself offers a different distinction. Does anybody remember what his distinction is between the two chuvos of the Chumash HaDeshen? Ben, do you remember offhand?
The difference is about whether the koblen is both formally and substantively similar to a poel, or if he's merely formally similar to a poel.
So yes, but why? What will determine which one we're interested in? It's going to depend which area of halacha.
Right.
Yes. Right. So the first tshuva is about whether you violate the issur of price gouging. When it comes to this employment relationship. And so he says, oh, with respect to Onah, what do we care about? Just formally, right? Are you hired as a poel, even if substantively you're very free, right? So the moment there's a time frame, you formally have features of a poel, and you're like an avid with respect to Onah. With respect to the right to withdraw, where the Torah is trying to protect your substantive freedom, then we care about the substantive features of the relationship. All right, so it's a distinction between onah on the one hand and the right to withdraw. We'll have a different criterion for what makes you into a poel versus a koblen for those different areas of halacha. And that's because he thinks that what's significant for the right to withdraw, he says, is whether you're yochol lehispanos me'asiyas hamlacha. Do you have the substantive freedom to do what you want, right? Only if you're too much like a slave substantively, only then will you have the schus lachzar. So I thought that was like a really interesting analysis of the Pesach Choshen. I do want to point out there's one problem with it. If you recall, earlier in the year, we saw that the Rambam was the one who had this chiddush to distinguish between a poel and a koblen with respect to Onah. What was the makar for the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira? So, of course, the Rambam never gives us Mekoros.
Which is a poel is like an Eved.
Yeah, that was the Rambam's reason. The Rambam said that a poel is like an Eved and a Koblen is not. So if you look here on the bottom of page 22, in the middle of page 22, you have a Trumas HaDeshen Siman Shin Yud Ches, a third Trumas HaDeshen, different from these first two. He comments on this Rambam, and he actually just gives us some insight as to where he thinks the Rambam got this idea from. So where did he think the Rambam got this idea from to distinguish between a Kavan and a Poel with respect to Ona, even though the Gemara doesn't? Anybody remember?
The Gemara
in Bar Mitzvah that distinguishes between them with respect to Zuchus Lachzor. So I just think it's kind of interesting that the Trumas HaDeshen himself attributes the Rambam's Ona distinction to the right to the Gemara about the right to withdraw. That's the source for the Rambam's distinction in Hilchos Ona. So I think that's a little problematic for the Piskei Choshen's attempt to argue that we're going to have a different standard for what makes you an Eved with respect to Ona than with respect to Chazara, in light of the Rambam, according to the Trumas HaDeshen's own light, the Rambam learning one from the other. So I think that might point in the direction that there has to be some other distinction between the Tshuvos of the Trumas HaDeshen along the lines that we discussed right in the beginning of the Chaburah today. All right, everybody good with that? Any thoughts on that observation in the Trumas HaDeshen? No, everyone's good. Ben, you're good. Okay, good.
Sharp.
What? Sharp. Yeah, not as sharp as the Avnei Nezer, and we don't have Donnie here to rain on our sharp parade.
It's more of a wild cheddar this time.
Right.
What?
More of a wild cheddar.
Right. But you see, that does, it's a little problematic for what the Piskei Choshen is trying to do.
Yeah.
All right. Good. So I want to now discuss two other distinctions between the two other ways of drawing a distinction between the Poel and the Kablan, both along the lines of how the compensation for the Kablan is structured. So, you know, until now we've been discussing more in terms of how much freedom does he have? Is he hired for a task? Is he hired per hour? But I want to point to the way a Kablan is compensated as perhaps a different ground for distinguishing between the Kablan and the Poel. So if you look here on page 30, we have this quote from the Chikrei Lev in Beis Simen Nun Beis.
On page 30?
About page 30. Well, so the Chikrei Lev, I have to pull up the source inside. Actually, I pulled this out of the back of the Masifta. So I have to double check that.
Seems like, yeah.
What?
I haven't seen so many Chikrei Levs in
my life. Yes, yes, yes. So look what he says here. All right. All right, well, actually, we're going to have a great Machane Ephraim today. Machane Ephraim is one of the things that
people
know that got Avram upset. Yeah.
Machane
Ephraim.
Yeah. Why?
Because he wants to just learn Rishonim. See, my view is that you got to learn wherever the action's at in the sugya, that's who's important, right? Whoever's saying the interesting things. Some people have the view that, like, we should have to know Tosos on the sugya. You know, we should have to know their Rambam.
Why is Tosos always saying something interesting?
What?
You're implying that the action's not always in Tosos?
I'm saying that the action is not Tosos, right? I mean, that's not contrary.
Right?
Take for example our sugya. I mean, the Rambam hasn't really, except for the Rambam Hilchos Mechira, I'm just in terms of the right to exit and those things. The Rambam hasn't said anything interesting on this whole sugya. The Rambam just really just quoted the Gemara. The action here is really in the Ramban and Tosos and the Shulchan Aruch. It's Pesach Choshen. So you know you gotta learn where the action's at. But some people think of it in terms of like, no, like our duty is to know like the Rambam Shita and every Sugya. Like the Bechina and the Bezen Shamal is not like what are the Yisodas of the Sugya. The Bechina is like what's the Shita of the Rambam Sugya. You know? All right. Now that I got that off my chest.
Yeah.
Good,
like, I was here for Shabbos with a good like, panel. You know?
Yes.
Yeah, it came up.
Yeah.
Up
with Shabbos. Yeah. Yeah. It did come up at the end. Yeah. So the Chikrei Lev here says, Havdal b'neim husha kablan hu muskar l'melacha. So a kablan is hired for a task, right? We know that, right? V'af escharo hu no tal mimena. I think that's really an important observation. That to a certain degree, his compensation is from the work that he does. Okay? We'll flesh that out more in a second. The ilu sachir ain't schirusa l'melacha el l'chaveiro. Right, so a poel is not hired for the work to be done. He's hired to his employer. So there's just a very formal difference between the two jobs. In one of them, the contractual duties is one where I'm hired to you. And in the other case, I'm just really hired to get a job done. And that's going to create different bases for compensation. Okay? And look what he says. Shaharei eino yachal la'akev la'atzmos hamlacha ad sheyakabel escharo. An important distinction is that a kablan is able to hold on to the object that he repaired until he gets his schar. Whereas a poel is not allowed to do that. And that's because a poel basically sells his labor ex ante to his employer. So if Ben employs me, he buys my labor for the day. So whatever I make is already Ben's, right? Because Ben has title to it through owning my labor. That's for a poel. For a kablan, it's very different. For a kablan, Ben doesn't acquire me. He asks me to do a task. I use my labor to create a task, and I have to do a job, and I now have the right to withhold that new thing that I create from Ben until he's willing to pay me for it. So I see there's this very formal difference between the way an employer gets rights over a poel's labor and the product, and the way he gets rights over the product created by a kablan. Is everybody clear on that?
Yeah.
Okay. And I think this and he's saying that's why there's a different basis for compensation. The compensation for a poel is for the labor. The compensation for a kablan is going to be like a purchase of the product that he creates. Okay? Look here at this Gemara in Bava Metzia, Kufiyud Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara has a very nice way of formulating this. The Gemara is going to say, look, we know that there's a prohibition of withholding wages from a poel. Hetaras biyomo titein scharo. There's an isser of baltalin pula sacher itchad boker. Right? So you can't withhold wages of a poel. But is it problematic to not pay a kablan on time? Okay? So, for example, I drop my suit off at the tailor, let's say, and guy says pick it up in a week, and I just, you know, I don't pick it up from him. Have I violated the prohibition of biyomo titein scharo if I don't pick it up? So Gemara says the following. This is Bava Metzia Kufiyud Beis Amud Aleph. Bava Minei Rav Sheshes, kablanos overlove mishum baltalin or ain't overlove mishum baltalin. And for a poel, we know you would violate, but do you violate it for kablanos? Uman kone b'shvach kli v'halvahi o ain't uman kone b'shvach kli v'schirosi. So what does that mean? Is anybody familiar with the machlokas of uman kone b'shvach kli?
Mentioned it last year.
Yeah, not just the fabric, but does he own what?
He's actually kona the object itself by appreciating it and transforming.
Yeah, by investing his labor in it, he acquires an ownership share in the object itself, right?
Yeah.
That's the Gemara's question. Now the Gemara says here, well, if uman is kona b'shvach kli. If the tailor acquires a property right in my suit when he begins to tailor it, then of course you're not going to violate biyomo titeim scharo, because there never is employment relationship here. It's not like I'm asking the tailor to do work for me. What I'm doing is I'm licensing him to invest his labor in the suit, to acquire an affirmative property right in the suit through his labor. And then when I'm paying him, I'm not paying him for the service. I'm simply buying off his new ownership share in the suit that he improved. So let's say my suit is worth, take an easy case. Let's say it's worth $900 before I give it to him. Yeah.
$6,000 suits.
What?
$6,000 suits.
Say right. For example.
Right, for example. And then the guy improves its value to $1,000. Okay, so he has a 10% share, basically, of in the suit, right? That's owned by him. When I pay him $100 for the tailoring, I'm not paying him for the service he provided. I'm buying out his share of ownership. That's right. And so the idea is you can't possibly violate biyomo titein scharo because it's not really schar, right? It's just now you're shutfin and you're buying out his ownership interest. That's the idea in the Gemara. And you can see Rashi actually says very nice in Kufi Beis Amud Aleph. Yair, you want to read the Rashi for us?
Sure.
Right. Here's a very important. Right, very nice phrase, right? When the tailor gives you back the suit, he's basically selling you his owner, his interest that he acquired through the improving the value. You know, there's a few interesting points there. So, I mean, one of them is not really relevant to our discussion if you're interested in, like, the, you know, halachic theories of ownership and value. So, you know, this reminds me very much of... Ben, you're a Strauss Center guy, so...
This is Locke.
This is Locke, wow. As if on cue.
I wasn't sure if it were like, pointing to something like halachic literature.
Or right, right. No, I wouldn't go to halachic literature. I wouldn't point to Strauss Center, you know, as a halachic... For you, yes, it's the same, but I wouldn't have... It wasn't Altier... Right, it's like the Gemara is machloka, so whether Basa Meikara or Basa like Tfos Lashon Rishon and Tfos Lashon Acharon. In the Strauss Center, I think it's Tfos Lashon Acharon.
Actually, I think Lincoln quotes this Gemara in Gettysburg Address.
Oh, yeah?
And that's what
he's referencing. Wow, wow.
I think this Gemara is longer than the Gettysburg Address.
So,
but yeah, it's Locke.
Yeah, so Locke in Two Treaties of Government. Chapter 5, right? He has a whole theory of like labor mixing as creating the basis for private property. You know, he says you own yourself. If you own yourself, you own your labor. If you own your labor, then you own the product that you mix your labor with. Now, it's a very, very problematic objection to Locke. Nozick has the famous objection. Ben, you know?
Nozick's a real philosopher.
Okay, right, okay. Right. Right. Nozick or so Nozick famously says, "Oh, you know, you mix your tomato juice with the East River. It doesn't give you a property right in the East River. It just means you lose your tomato juice." Right? So it's not clear why labor mixing gives you ownership rather than like forfeiting your. But I think the interesting thing here is that the halacha doesn't go to either extreme, right? It doesn't say like Locke that when you mix your labor, you own the entire thing. It's interesting consos about the Munkunder Shvakli, which we could talk about later in the year. It doesn't say that you just lose your labor. It says, well, you have an ownership interest up to the value of the contribution of your labor. Right? That's the interest that you have in the object. So that's a background just point, I think, what underlies this idea of Munkunder Shvakli. What's important for our purposes is that this helps us draw a really conceptual distinction between the way a poel works and the way a kabbalah works. Right? So the way a poel works is that you acquire his labor, and that's what gives you ownership over the things he produces. Yad poel kiyad balabayis, etc., etc. And you have a duty to pay him for his work, for his labor. When it comes to the kabbalah, you're not acquiring his labor at all. He labors under his own ownership authority, and then you're just purchasing the product from him. And that's why there's not going to be an Isser B'yomot Titein Schara. Okay? But this helps us draw an important distinction between Kabbalah and Poel in terms of the nature of how they're compensated. Yeah, you want to make a point? Then we'll take Adam.
Yeah, so just to note one consequence of this.
Yes.
Anyone who takes this idea seriously wouldn't be able to conceive of, let's say, Malami being a Kabbalah. That would be inconceivable.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. What does it mean to labor? Right, yeah. The Gemara kind of gets at this. What do you do then in cases where there's no real contribution to the material item that's being improved? Right? That's the Gemara, this Bamitzia discussion here kind of gets into that problem.
So the more ground the Gemara gives on that question,
yeah.
The so less seriously we'll take the idea of... Like,
yes, but what the Meiri does say, the Meiri says, even in those cases, is what's going to happen is that the Kabban still has like a right over the object that he's working on, even if there's no like improvement that he does to it.
So what, he owns your kid when he's being molested?
Right, so out of the kid case.
You can hit the kid. You own the kid.
It's not that you own him, it's much that you have no duty, and the kid case is still going to be problematic. But even in case where it's more just like a service, there's no material improvement to the item, you have no duty to return it until... he pays you. So whereas a Kablan always had, whereas a Poel always has an obligation to give, like to give the thing that he worked on to the Balabayas, he's like no bargaining power because he sells his labor l'chatchila. A Kablan could hold on to the item that he was given until he receives compensation. And that's why there's not going to be an Isser of Bal Talin either. And that's what the Chikrei Lev is getting at. Shehare yochol la'akev la'atzmas ha'malacha ad she'ekabel eschara. Right? Which also speaks to the fact that the compensation is in. He could at least withhold the item until he's paid. So even if you don't buy into Umen Kona Bishvach Kli, the tailor still has no duty to give back my suit until I pay him. Which is different from Poel, who always has the duty to hand over the thing that he's laboring on, because you own him l'chatchila. Okay, so you see, it's a little more difficult in the child case to figure out how it works. But even if you don't go in for the strong reading of Umen Kona Bishvach Kli, you could still draw this distinction based off the nature of the compensation.
Okay. When we sort of put a Bishvach Kli, does that mean that my hand has to buy the Bishvach Kli?
I think you could probably stipulate how much it's worth.
Right. Theoretically, if you have $900 suit and I had $100 value, and I've cleaned the Bishvach Kli, then you really should owe me $111.
If it was how much? If it was what?
If you have $900 suit.
Yeah.
And you give it to me and I work on it and add $100 value.
Yeah.
That really means that $100 I added on, so I actually own 11
for adding value. Why 11?
Because you gave it to me at $900.
Is that 11% increase?
Yeah.
It's not 10%?
No, it's 11%. Because that's 900 to 1,000. 1,000 to 1,100 would be 11%.
10%.
Sorry, 10%.
Yeah. Right. I hear that. Yeah, I guess it would depend on... I think it really depends on how much you agree to. See, I think you could contract around like the actual improvement delta.
Mm-hmm.
The delta value, right? I don't know, right? Meaning just the difference in value. I'm going to stop saying the same thing over and over again. I don't think it has to be fixed to the actual market improvement, right? It'd be whatever you agreed to. That's just like your subjective way of evaluating it. Yeah. Follow up or?
No.
Okay, yeah. No.
We touched upon this last year in the discussion of Hezekshen and Mikar, whether or not adding value that's not discernible.
Mikar? I don't think so. I don't think it came up in that context. It may have come up in a different context, but I don't remember exactly.
So how would that play out if you were to add value, similar to like Malamed?
In Onikar?
Yeah, if it's in Onikar, would a Kavan also be... Would they also be Mikabel?
Would a Bishvach Kli? Yeah, I think so. I don't think it has to be like physical or something. I would imagine that it's really the difference in value that you add. That's what's giving you the property, right? It doesn't have to be like you're mixing something physical with it. Like labor is like not like a physical thing, right? Labor is like a market value or something. Right.
Yeah, I was thinking like a computer programmer. Like,
yeah.
It's not really the
100%, exactly. Yeah, I don't think it has to do with the end, per se. You know, people get upset about Locke for this. Probably didn't discuss it. It's too sophisticated, because they say that it's... labor is not the right kind of thing to be mixed. You know, you can mix eggs. You can mix oatmeal, right? Kind of like what you're thinking, tangible things. Labor is like, what does it mean to mix labor with an object? Right? It doesn't get mixed in. It's like, show me the labor. Right? Like, no, there's a thread in there. So that's my point. The moment you're going in for this kind of idea, you're not thinking in the end terms.
So there's no true labor in mixing your tomato juice in the East River.
What?
There's no true labor in mixing your tomato juice in the East River.
Right.
Because you're doing work on tomato juice, you're not doing work on the East River.
Right. The tomato juice is just an analogy that's just to show that just because you mix something that's yours with something that's not yours, doesn't follow that you gain ownership over the thing that's not yours.
But when you say mix something that's yours, it's going off topic. But when you say mix something that's yours and that's not yours, it's what is yours? You're saying you yourself.
The labor.
Right. So mixing the labor with an object that's yours. To me, that makes sense. Because it's different than saying mixing an object that's yours and a different object that's not yours. That doesn't make sense.
Okay. I mean, so you're saying like you could forfend against the Nozick counterexample by distinguishing between like mixing like a end thing with something that's not yours and mixing your labor with something.
One of those six.
Yeah, okay. It's a path to explore. I'll have Ben take it up at the next next conference.
Nozick's a leftist.
No, Nozick's a crazy, he's a libertarian.
Yeah, I know. I'm just criticizing Locke.
What?
Criticizing Locke.
Yeah. Well, actually, he criticizes Locke and goes even more to the right. He says Locke was mistaken to think that you need labor mixing to generate, you could just generate property rights with something less than labor. So.
But Hobbes told him, so what do you need any labor?
Well, Hobbes is complicated.
You just need that word like boundary between.
Yeah, we have to get back on this again. It's like we're just see you just talk about it. You just mention the Strauss Center and you get sucked into the Western thought part. See, it's like
just connects so well.
Yeah.
The
okay, that's one point I wanted to make. The second point I wanted to make, with respect to distinguishing between the Pola and the Kablon vis-a-vis their compensation, really comes out of the Mordechai and the Sugya about Yashna L'Schiras Metchil V'Yad Sof, here in the middle of page 31. So, Ben, you want to read this Mordechai for us in the middle? Simen Shimna Malef, middle of page 31.
It's also about compensation schemes.
So that's what I want to take out of it. Yeah, we saw this earlier because there's kind of the question exactly how you distinguish between a Kablon and a Poel. Is it the moment there's a time frame? Right? Remember we had this ambiguity last year about Heim Lezman Meruba, Heim Lezman Muad. Right? Does that mean that there's no time frame, or does that mean that whether or not there's a time frame? Right? So Ben, just
cut that verbatim.
You can start from the last clause. She'eno kore kablanas.
She'eno kore kablanas. Ella adam kabel kama lektor Heim Lezman Meruba, Heim Lezman Muad.
Yeah. So what makes you a Kablon is that you're hired for a task.
Right.
And then we had this ambiguity about Lizman Meruba, Lizman Muat. But I want to focus on that last phrase, L'cheshe yigmor yitein lo kol schara. What does that connote to you?
Wait, where exactly is this?
The top of 31.
Oh, okay.
I'm highlighting it right now. I don't know if you could see that. L'cheshe yigmor yitein lo kol scharo. What does that mean?
First of all, at the end of the time, it doesn't matter how long it was.
Well?
It doesn't matter how long it was. Once the product is produced, then you pay them.
Once the product is produced, then you pay them. Yes, and what's the significance of that?
There's no time period. I mean, it's not like I'm paying him like every week until he gets it done.
Yeah.
Or a fraction.
So the payment is fully contingent on
the completion of the product.
Yeah. Lichish, what characterize? Remember, the Mordechai is bringing this here to characterize what makes a Kablon a Kablon. It says it's because you're hired for a task, and part of being hired for a task as a Kablon is that you're only entitled to compensation lichishe yigmar when the job is fully completed. There's no basis for compensation prior to that.
I mean, you can impose
it. What?
You can impose it.
Well, that's going to be the problem for us. Problem for us is going to be is that how do you square this with the ability to be chozer and get yadol tachtona? But right now I want to point out that a poel, it sounds, if you're hired for a certain amount of time, then it makes sense to prorate your compensation, right, per the amount worked if you breached. So if you're hired for a year and you work half a year, we'll give you half the compensation because you're hired per a certain duration of time. And so it makes sense to cut that up and prorate it. When you're a Kablon, it sounds like because you're hired to get a job done, there's no basis in halacha for compensation until the job is fully completed. Yair is right to raise the alarm. Well, how does that get to reconcile with our sugya, which says that when you breach, you get some compensation, just yadol ha-tachtona, right?
I wouldn't have used such forceful language. It sounded wrong, yeah. But that is the question.
Yes. good. So look here in the Gemara in Kedushin Mem Chesem et Aleph. It's a very famous machlokas. The Gemara wants to know, generally when you have a Kablon who's doing a job, Is the Kablan entitled to pay, to be paid mitchila v'yadsof? Is there yeshna l'schiras mitchila v'yadsof? Is it that as the Kablan does some of the job, right, as he's hemming the suit and tapering the jacket, etc., is he earning his schar as he goes? Or ina l'schiras el l'vasof? Or is the compensation only earned once the job is fully completed?
How do we know this is talking about a Kablan?
Yeah, good question. The case itself, which the Gemara is commenting on, is like the woman says, tells the person, oh, like, you know, schok lefanai rekod, do a job for me, and we'll call that a kedushin. So it seems to be a Kablan. It's an interesting question whether it would fully apply to a poel. Yeah.
Because the Gemara, I mean, the Gemara of Mitzia uses Kablan as dafka when it was talking about Kablan as
and here it might be Schiras generally. Yeah. It's a good point. We'll talk more about this when we get deeper into this question later on in the Zman. For now, you'll see that the issue is really only going to arise within Kablanas for us.
Okay.
Tosas and Bamitzia Samachayim et Aleph comments on this, and he says, it's an interesting view. Anybody get a chance to see this Tosos before the Chabur today? No? No? So let me tell you what he says. He says, Afil Lamanda Amar and Babakama and Kedushin, Di Yeshna Leschiros Mitchila Vyadsof, Mode De Eina Mishtalemes El Levasof. So he says, even if you hold that the tailor earns his compensation as he goes, so it's like accruing to him bit by bit from the beginning. That's only retroactive, beginning from the moment that he completes the job. So Tosfos wants to say, look, everybody agrees that there's no entitlement to compensation whatsoever before the job is completed. The machlokas of yeshna l'schiras mitchila v'atzof ein l'schiras el v'asof is only about once the job is completed, does that mean that he gains everything at the last second? Or does it mean that once the job is completed, we look back and say, oh, from the time of completion, we look back and say, oh, he earned it as he went. Minaf kamina. You know, if you're Makadesh and Isha with the Kablanos that you did, is the Kedushin effective from the very beginning, from the first moment, like from the started tailoring of Pruta worth? Or is it only effective really from the end? But everybody agrees that the Kablan gets nothing if the job is not completed. Now, this is a huge problem for our sugya, right? Our sugya seemed to say that even if the kablan breaches, the job is not completed, the kablan is entitled to some pro rata payment for what he did, correct? But if you take Tosfos' interpretation that everybody agrees ein l'schiras el v'asof in this fundamental way, then there should never be a basis to pay the kablan until the job is done, correct?
What if you just define sof differently?
Oh, meaning what?
Meaning once you do chazara, that is your sof. You
very good. That's Tosa's move. That's Tosa's. So Ben, excellent.
This is the actions of Tosa.
We'll just call you Rabbeinu Tam. We'll just call you Rabbeinu Tam today. Rabbeinu Ben. Yes. Yeah, so read Tosa's here. What does he say?
You see?
Yeah, Afilu Laman Damar, the one that I highlighted right now.
Afilu Laman Damar, Eina Elav Lusof, Moda Poal Yakub Zorbo, Afilu Bchatzirion.
Notice that's our Gemara, right? That's our Gemara. And interesting, for Yair's point, he's talking about a poel even. So I'll have to figure out. Ukishehu chozer. Yeah. All right, it's beautiful, Ben. It's exactly as you put it. Right? Very nice. It's almost like a formal trick, right? Or a conceptual trick Tosfos is pulling on us. He's saying, look, yeah, ein l'schiras el v'asof, you only get it at the end. But maybe part of the chiddush of Zechus Lachzor is that we'll view the breach as an end. Now I'm a little misupik as to what Tosfos means here, because, and this gets into Yair's point about a Kablan versus Poel, what allows Tosfos to pull this move to view the breach, the withdrawal, as the completion? On the face of it, I would have said that ein l'schiras el v'asof means there's no basis for compensation until the job is done. Right? So what allows Tosfos to make this move? So what would you say, Yair?
What would I say that allows Tosfos to make this move?
Yeah.
We have one left.
What's the rationale here for saying this?
It's the Gemara that you close there.
That what? The Gemara that?
You could be closer.
You could be closer. What do you mean by you could?
You could be closer and still be paid.
And still be paid.
Meaning what?
Then you could be closer.
Like clearly, there's
what?
Clearly you earned. Sorry.
You get the.
Well, it's true. That's what's motivating Tosas to say this.
Okay.
Right. He's bothered by interpreting that Gemara. How do you interpret that Gemara? But what do you think is the underlying justification for his position? I get it. He's reconciling the Gemaras, right? But what in the Gemara licenses him to say that Chazara could equal Sof? Well, look what Tosa says. The poel yachal lachzar bechatzi ayom. I wonder if he's thinking that it's the that's part of the chiddush of kili bnei Yisrael avadim v'lo avadim lavadim, meaning part of the special zchus lachzar is that we'll view it as the completion of the. We give the poel the right to. What's it called when you like kind of like force the ending to something?
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
over tell you the Lord of that kid
something. Well, yeah, no. Whatever, to prematurely like bring about the conclusion of the malacha. That's part of the chiddush of the zechus lachzar. Does that resonate with you guys? Meaning, so it's not just that the poel has a privilege to be chozer. It's that the Torah is saying that the poel has the right to determine when the job is complete. Now, if that's true, I think it will be limited to poel. I don't know that we would be justified in extending it to a kablan who doesn't really have any special zechus lachzar. Yair, this is why it gets to your point about the distinction between a kablan and a poel. But I'm not sure if Tosas is saying that it's part of the special zchus lachzor that the poel can prematurely declare that this is the sof, this is the completion of the malacha. Or if Tosas is saying just that sof doesn't require completion, sof could just be like when your involvement is done. Which could either be completion, or when you breach, even if your breach is wrongful, like in a kablan. So my point here is I'm not sure if Tosas is saying that this is a chiddush based off of zechus chazara, or this is just a general interpretation of what sof means. I think the problem with the latter view is that when it says ein l'schir zel v'sof, I would have imagined that meant that there's no basis to compensation until you're completed, until you complete it.
I mean, the problem is that you can
justifies
envision. The relationship, the balabai's pole relationship in the absence of the chazara. So the entire discussion of the Geshem and the Seris, the Tchilat Atzov,
but then Afkamina is for,
predicated on the right to chazara.
Right, but then Afkamina is for a kablon. Right, so for a kablon who breaches without this special chus, would he be entitled to compensation? Because you're right.
Assuming that a kablon doesn't have the right.
Right, which we know, right? Adonizer's Kiddush aside, right? Assuming that generally a kablan doesn't have this chus chazara, kili ben Yisrael avayim doesn't apply to a kablan, right? Then so for him would be defined by the completion.
No, you could even say in any case where a kablan being paid the Yadawal Fatuna, still, it doesn't need to be a consequence of the right to be chozer. It's just, you know, so long as I have the Hofelian,
power?
Hofelian power, thank you. I don't say ability, it's the wrong word. So long as I have the Hofelian power to be chozer, which I think. It seems like in the absence of a Kenyan, a
Kablan
has.
Right. Absent, yeah, then you would be.
Then it would apply to a Kablan as well.
Maybe. But either way, Tosas' move, however way you interpret it, is to say that Sof could be either the completion or when you withdraw. And that's what entitles you to your compensation. So I think that's like it's a very novel idea, kind of Ben was machaving to it. Yeah. I don't think we gain so much from it in terms of important takeaways, right? I don't think there's an important takeaway from this Tosos. It's more of like a cop-out answer. You're saying, oh, how do you resolve this? Oh, this also could be considered self. Okay? The Machane Ephraim, I think, has a really interesting position here. It's going to blow your minds.
So this is sharp.
This is a good example where the action, there's more action in the Machane Ephraim than in Tosos. So we'll send the message to Avram. All right, so here's what he says in Sefiras Poelim Siman Hei.
That was a long one.
You don't have to read the whole thing. He says that the Rush holds that a Kablan has no right to be Chozer from his Malacha. So I guess this gets to Yair's point. Yair, read the beginning of the Machane Ephraim.
Sure.
Kablan to Hisra B'Malacha M'Yachal Lachzerbo.
Midina Nira Divers Machloket Shem. The Rush of which is Klok Dalid Sifbet Kata.
Yeah, so you notice he's saying that the Rush holds that a Kablan has no legal right to back out. Okay, so a Kablan has a duty to remain and finish the job all the way through. This kind of we saw it goes out. Should we say it's only if there's a Kenyan? Sounds like he wants to read that in the Rush, that even if there's no Kenyan, a Kablan has to stay all the way through because there's no Zechus of Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim. All right? Okay. Now skip to the last, to the paragraph that starts, the Eich Sheiya. I'm highlighting it.
Yeah.
Eich Sheiya. Stop. So the Baal HaBayis has a claim right to withhold payment until the job is complete.
According to the Rosh or according to everyone?
At least the way he understands V'nafka Lan L'Inyan Dina. Right? So I think he's working within the Rosh and he's just saying we paskin like the Rosh. So the Baal HaBayis has no duty to pay any compensation until the job is fully completed. Okay. Where does he get that from? Oh, sorry. O al yedei atz. O al yado. Right? Either that he could insist that the Kablan himself finish the job. Go on, Yair. Oh.
O al yedei achirin. Kibin deschiras inam shalom es al odos.
Wow. So since schiras is not owed, since payment is not due until the job is complete, the Baal HaBayis has no duty to pay the Poel if the Poel withdraws in the middle. Okay? The Baal HaBayis has a right to withhold payment until the job is fully complete when it comes to a Kabla. Where does he get that from? Okay, you know, yeah, that he goes through a whole reading of the Avodah Zarah. But then he says, look at the last paragraph. Somebody else has to... Yeah, you'll see in a second. Okay. Yeah, you'll see what it means. Yeah, B'hadi Katani. Last paragraph of the Machane Ephraim. Aye, this is so sir, the Gemara in our parak, right? Our Gemara says that if a Kablan breaches, he gets Yadal HaTachtona, but he gets something that's inconsistent with Enel Eschir Zal Vasofi, you have no duty to pay him until the job is complete. So what does he say? Yeah, meaning what? Yeah, wild shot. He said, I'll give you two ways to make sense of the Gemara B'Metzia that says you have to pay him when he breaches. What are the two ways? Okay.
Well, the second way is
that
he wants to pay.
Yeah. Baal is like, hey, I know I have no duty to pay you, but I'm a good guy and I want you to make feel good, so I'll pay you.
That's
wild. Yeah. Right? Talking about a Dachlik interpretation of the Gemara. What's his first view? What's his first answer? Shamin lo livasof, meaning what? What Noah asked about the formulation.
When he finishes.
Not when he finishes. Yes. When the job is complete,
yeah.
Right? Then payment is due. And payment is due according to your contribution to the final product. So let's say Yair gives me a suit to tailor. I only tailor it 50% of the way through. If the job never gets completed, Yair has no duty to pay me. If I then ask Noah to finish the job and the job gets complete, then looking backwards, Yair has a duty to compensate me for my 50% contribution. But what's unlike Tosos, who said that will just define Sof by the breach, the Machane Ephraim sticks with his guns of Ein Al Eschir Salva Sof, and he actually says there's no duty to pay until the job is complete. If the job gets completed, then you have a duty to compensate the contributor. So I think this is another really sharp way of bringing out this distinction between a poel and a kablan, right? Whereas the poel has this chus chazara and an entitlement to be paid even if the job is never done, because he's really hired pro rata for hours of contribution, the kablan specifically has no entitlement to pay until the job is to be paid until the job is complete. And that's you see very nicely from this Machane Ephraim.
Does he buy into Tosfos' understanding of the machlokes between Yeshna?
It's not clear. It's not clear. He doesn't really tell us.
Right. Because you still have to assume that what does it mean that he English kind of all of us so means
that there's no some
so if you hold Yeshna,
what does that mean?
So do you,
right. It's not
would that not be true?
Right, right. So we're not learning that sugya right now. I think later on in the year we actually are going to get take a closer look at it. For our purposes right now, it's more the Machane Ephraim's position that I think is striking, and what that suggests in his mind about the difference in a poel and a kablan. Right? Yair, do you see that?
Yeah.
How exactly he makes sense of the whole issue of Yeshna L'Schiras Mitzchil Batzof and Ein L'Schiras Mitzchil Batzof and what the Mandam are arguing about, I think we want to put that question on hold for now. All right?
Machane Ephraim makes a lot of sense because you have a shirt.
Yes.
He's very rational, like, okay, you have one shirt to make.
Right.
It's not done, it's only half done, or half a shirt, so like, because nothing is built in.
Yeah,
there.
I think you're right. That does make a lot of it's very appealing in those cases.
But what happens if you have 10 shirts? I did 7 of them.
So I think then you have to figure out, was the guy hired per shirt or per the whole thing?
Right, like, so you can make the cloak in 2 weeks, like, I have 10 shirts I need to be made with this fabric, what can you? $70 per shirt. Is there a difference between I'll give you $70 per shirt versus I'll give you $700
for all of them? Yeah, you can see already in this. That's what he's getting at with this that Sugin Avarazara that he quotes that I skipped over. Sugin Avarazara, I have it here on Samachem at Aleph. The Gemara distinguishes between a case where you ask somebody to move 100 barrels for $100 and where you ask somebody to move 100 barrels for a dollar each. Because that's the question of how do you individuate the kablanos. That's more of like an ancillary question, right?
Right.
And you'll see also all the good kablanos questions are, what was the intended individuation? When I hired you to write a Sefer Torah, did I hire you to write each parsha or, you know, each unit that's could be viewed as a complete thing on its own? Or
depends on time period.
What?
Depends on time period.
Right, maybe. Right. Noah.
So how does the Machane Ephraim work within the framework of and move on the Korna Mishvach? Is it that once the other workers complete the job, so now since he already invested his labors into that job, so the Baal Bayit is mechuyav to pay him because he's invested in that in the job? Is that how it works?
Not sure. It's a really good question. You're asking what exactly is the relationship between Yashna L'Schiras Mitchila Batzov and Uman Kohen B'Shvach Kli?
Yeah.
I don't think we know enough yet to weigh in on that question. I see like why you might think that if it's Yeshna L'Schiras Mitchila Batzof, that connects nicely with Uman Kohen B'Shvach Kli, because like it's as you invest your labor, you're kind of gaining a property right. But you might think that a condition of there being any Shvach here is that it be completed, right? So what's the increased value by my, you know, tailoring half a suit? 0 until the whole thing is done. So I'm not sure exactly what the relationship between the two views is.
Right. But like when it comes to like Nezek, if you're a partial contributor and there's nobody else to, and you're not the one who's fully responsible, but somebody else comes and, you know, finishes digging the, you know, the tent spot
before. Yeah.
So that person, if you can't collect touchment from him, you can collect touchment from the partial
contributor.
It's a good
question. Yeah, it's a good question. It'd be interesting to do like a lateral comparison of partial contributions in kind of these Schiras Poelim cases and partial contributions in the Zikin cases and see if there's a common. Yeah, it's really interesting. I have to look back to try to compare the two. That'd be really interesting to check. Okay. Good. You can see here, look interestingly, just, you can see on the bottom of 33, the top two lines on 34, just an interesting quote from the Pesachei Choshen. He says, "Ima kablan eino chozebo elisha misatzel o docheyu b'leich v'shuv, afi she'ina mechuser ela tikun katan she'shava davar muat eino chai b'scharo. Deschirus eino mishalem esal v'asof filu b'chisar en makash achron." So, you know, like, so long as he doesn't finish the job, like, there's really no duty to pay. You know, even if he's just missing, like, the final hammer blow on the thing that he's doing. Just a nice reinforcement, nice formulation of the idea of eino mishalem esal v'asof. So if you hire a kablan, like, there's no obligation to pay until the job is done. So the reason why I brought these sugyas to our attention is, again, we're interested in the distinction between a poel and a kablan, and I think these are nice ways of pointing to the compensation scheme and the method through which the kablan acquires his entitlement to be paid as another grounds for distinguishing between a poel and a kablan. Right? So the first part of umakon v'shvach kli shows us that the kablan is investing labor and gaining a property right in the object. That's what creates his entitlement. He also has a right to hold on to the object until you pay him. And the second halacha here of Eino l'zchus ela v'asof shows that there's no duty to compensate until the job is fully complete. Masha'en kein for a poel, where there's a duty to compensate him throughout the process because he's really being paid per unit of time.
You don't see those two halachas as a little bit of conflict with each other?
Okay.
Yeah,
you
acquire value.
Yeah.
By putting in a bit of.
It should be pro rata.
I think it should be pro rata. Does that make sense?
I think that's what Noah was pointing out a little bit. What's exactly the relationship between Eino l'zchus ela v'asof and umakon v'shvach kli?
Right.
But you can see at least in some cases where you might think that the value contribution is not significant enough if there's no means of assuring completion. Right? But it might depend case to case, which is what Adam was pointing out. Oh, if you didn't finish the shirt has no value if it's missing an arm, right? But if you were supposed to do 10 shirts and you did 3, well, maybe there is some value that's accrued along the way, right?
Yeah.
Interesting enough, I mean, if the soap, as soon as it stops working, I start wearing the shirt and I wear a half of the shirt or a full shirt.
Okay, any other comments on this? Kablan versus Powell? This is the, before we put this matter to rest.
Good.
Okay, good.
I like the last point.
Yeah. Good. That's it for the Kablan versus Powell discussion.